Cornucopia Radio presents
Bits and Bobs by Jeannie McInnes.
Several years after my family relocated to England, I realized that I'd never fully experienced culture shock. I had American friends who, after only a few months, woke up one day to be offended at the oversized plugs, cringing as housemates wash but never rinse their dishes, and dreading the commute to work in dark winters. But discovering the culture became a humorous adventure to me. For example, I'd sit in toddler groups with my squirmy children as older ladies sang, "Where is Thumpkin?" A nursery rhyme counting each finger, hands raised high in unison, oblivious to the culture I'd come from. Jovial grandmothers made the same offensive middle finger gesture found with frustrated motorists in the U.S. It provided more than once a stifled, almost astonished chuckle when they reached the third chorus. But every adventure, however, has its challenges, and though I didn't have many, I had an especially large one only a few years after the move. I learned to drive at 15 years old. Being a late bloomer, I was only 4'9" at the time. My mother plays phone books on the seat to increase my height in our Ford Bronco as we bravely practiced on the back roads. Where I lived in Texas, you had to take a 5-week class and learn a bit with your parents before being released into the open, wild plains. The test was simple, and it seemed that if you could see straight and put the car in gear, you had the state's permission to drive. The grace period for an American license ended about a year after our arrival to Sheffield. With two small children in tow, learning to properly drive was one of the last things I wanted to do. I had more than 20 years of driving under my belt, which is a rite of passage into young adulthood in the U.S., and to obtain a new license felt like a life's regression. After the first initial weeks of becoming familiar with driving on the other side of the road, in the other side of the car, I felt confident I would be up for the challenge. Often my husband and I would joke when we noticed the beginner scarlet letter L sticker plastered on slow-moving vehicles. "L is for losers," we'd say. The joke was short-lived. We were annoyed at the long process of learner's permits, written and computer simulation tests, and then the actual 45-minute exam. But my husband pioneered the way. Confident driver himself, two attempts at the practical test, and it resulted in a pass. I too lunged forward on my journey of becoming legal. Handling a double pushchair on the tram with a house full of grocery items hanging on the sides didn't thrill me. And then having to shove it up a steep hill to get it to my house, probably in the rain, was motivation enough for me to persevere. The written and computer simulation part were a bit unnerving, more for its unknown quantity than its difficulty. I had read, practiced, and done every simulation you could find, and scored perfectly on the day of the test. But I didn't realize that there are rules of the road found in the practical exam that I couldn't read about in a book or online. The morning of the examination, I arrived early, cruising around the center and remembering all that my husband had lectured me on, with parallel parking, the odd reverse around the corner, and then the backing into the parking bay. All ages sat in the waiting room, instructors nervously chatting, and students looking as if they were awaiting a root canal. As the clock ticked closer to the allotted time of the exam, silence began to suffocate the room. Thud, thud, thud. As we listened to the examiners one by one walk down the stairwell, hidden behind the mystery door. Steely-faced with no sign of softening, my examiner introduced himself in a hollow voice.
Proceed to the car.
eye test completed a few feet from the car, the instructor chose 2 out of 14 questions regarding the vehicle itself as I translated what he asked. Open the bonnet? Oh, you mean the hood. That's what they say in the States. Hopefully I'll understand everything. You know, I'm American, if you can't tell. You know, it may mean a bit of translating your accent and everything. Not thinking the one-sided conversation had gone very well, I decided to keep my mouth shut unless asked for the rest of the test. I flew blindly through the streets, noticing out of the corner of my eye the constant tick marks made on the paper and the deepening furrow in his brow. My husband took 2 times. No worries if it takes another time to pass. It was a good experience to know what this is all about. Right? When we stopped, he coldly asked with concern if I had children. Yeah, I have. That's why I need this driver's license. I have a lot of stuff to carry around in the stroller. I mean the pram, I mean the pushchair. Whatever you people call it. I have small kids. You understand. He was silent for a moment, calculating his next knife-like words.
I am so very glad not to pass you today, as I feel you are unfit to drive due to your blatant disregard of the speed limit and lack of signaling at roundabouts. Were you not aware that you were 5 to 10 miles over the speed limit in certain places? You were very fortunate not to get a speeding ticket today.
And with a huff, he left me in the car. 6 weeks later, I took the second test. Oppressive clouds hung over my head, gathering strength as the day approached. I followed the same routine, though driving much slower than before, until the final approach to the center.
The horn.
I'm sorry?
The horn. You affected another driver. You do realize that, don't you?
Were they honking at me? Crap. I slowed at the last traffic light, unfamiliar with the green filter, straight arrow next to the red light, and managed to halt. The car behind me honked, giving the final blow of a major fault due to my driving affecting another vehicle. The instructor gave me my yellow copy of the test, unfazed by my quivering voice and red nose. I went home in tears and booked the next test. Test number 3 had a different feel, though I still felt that same wave of nausea that had plagued me for the other 2 exams, my instructor came down the stairwell with a smile. His chatty nature put me at ease.
So you're American, eh? Where are you from, love?
He asked in a broad South Yorkshire accent, and in the first 10 minutes, he noticed the car seats in the back.
How many kids you got, love?
I told him, and a little about the children and my best Southern Belle sweetness I can muster. Staring out the window, he replied.
They must be gorgeous.
Was he hitting on me? Was that a covert compliment? I quickly changed the subject. At the end of the test, I thought I had gained a new acquaintance until I saw the marks he began to tally of my minor faults. 14 would fail me, and it looked close. Through my mind flashed the thought of using the previous compliment to my advantage. I abruptly discarded the notion, less for the unattractive prospect of flirting with an obese stranger, and more for the fact that a kiss of bribery would haunt my conscience every time I saw the license in my wallet. No, thank you. I'd rather take the test again.
I can tell you're a good driver, but it's just these little bits and bobs.
As he left the car, I decided that it was these bits that were failing me, and his name must have been Bob. Test number 4 was the first examiner.
Take the next right, please. Straight across the next roundabout. Pull over and stop in a safe place. And now, if you could do a 3-point
turn, please?
He wore a smirk the entire test. I think more for the fact that he relished in failing me yet again than any kindness hidden in the recesses of his dark, horrible heart. Test number 5 still remains a mystery to me. It was a cold winter day, and when the examiner called my name, I realized I had gotten the hardest one. I had seen him from previous interactions with the other drivers that he was out for blood. I was no different. After the obligatory eye exam, he pulled out a small ruler of sorts to measure the tire tread. What's he doing? None of the other guys had done that.
Mrs. McKenzie, as you can tell from my tire tread depth gauge, your tread is too low. I must inform you that if you'd like to complete this test today, you must change your tire to the spare in the next 3 minutes, or you will not pass.
Knowing that I wasn't even sure where the spare was on my car, I certainly knew it was not humanly possible to change the tire in that time.
You now have 2 minutes and 30 seconds. How would you like to proceed?
Can I have my form now? My husband and I looked at the yellow copy test results and saw that most of the faults were the result of ignorance. We enlisted an acquaintance, who was a qualified instructor, to teach me what I could only learn from experience. I had 2 lessons. With test number 6, I only had a few minor faults.
Yes, but did you notice the driver behind you had to brake? You do comprehend what this means. Here is your copy of the test and the statement of failure form. You realize you must wait the obligatory
6 weeks. Yeah, I know.
And here is a leaflet on eco-safe driving. You will probably find this helpful.
Oh, thanks. I continued with the lessons until my instructor had hardly any remarks to say as we drove. It'd been more than a year since my first exam, and my confidence had eroded little by little. These final lessons gave me the courage I needed to continue, no matter how many tests it took. During test 7, I felt more at peace, despite the sudden rain and the tire gauge tyrant happening to be my examiner.
Mrs. McKenzie, you'll need to perform a right turn at the end of this road. Next, I will shortly ask you to perform an emergency stop. Stop! Thank you, Mrs. McKenzie. You may now proceed and turn left up ahead. At the next roundabout, you will take the 2nd exit. Near the bus stop ahead, I would like you to perform a parallel parking manoeuvre in an area that is safe for you to pull over in. Please do so when you're ready.
Lacking small talk to fill the time, I maneuvered the vehicle around corners and streets that had become very familiar. He was pickier than the others, and I also noticed that he liked to appear to make marks on my test just to throw me off. At the end, before driving out of the parking area, I texted my husband with another "I didn't pass." From previous experiences of coming home rather emotional, I knew my husband was prepping the kids one more time to be prepared for the worst. A minute before I reached my driveway, I slowed to a stop and resent the text with a mischievous grin. I didn't pass. Guess, but I did pass the driver's test. As I pulled in, he flung open the door and gave the deserved scolding with the added smile. Keys in hand, I took us out to celebrate that night and felt the weight of the past year roll onto the road. So, what was the laborious lesson learned? Perseverance pays, even if it breaks your pocketbook. The small piece of pink plastic resting in my wallet is the most expensive plastic I own.
Bits and Bobs was written and performed by Jeannie McGuinness. It also featured the additional voices of Howard Russell, Tom Wilson, Chris Bellamy, Edward Eggleston, and David Ault. The musical score used in this work was composed and performed exclusive for this production by Anil Dubey. This work is released under a Creative Commons agreement. For more information and to discover even more amazing audio productions, visit our website at cornucopia-radio.co.uk.